Hello, everybody. This is Van Williams, the Green Hornet, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello, comic book fans. Welcome once again to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thank you for joining me here in the lair, where each and every week I bring you in-depth interviews with the legendary talents who bring our favorite comic book characters to life on the small screen, the big screen, on stage, and beyond. Thank you so much for making Comic Book Central a part of your week. We've got another amazing guest waiting in the wings for you today. I'm going to get to that interview in just a minute. But before I get to that interview, a couple of items. First off, congratulations to my buddy Derek Cook over at the Monster Kid Radio podcast at monsterkidradio.net. Derek won a Rondo Hatton Classic Horror Award, and he recently broadcast his 200th episode of Monster Kid Radio. So, congratulations. Big things going on over at MKR. If you're not already, check out the show and tell him Comic Book Central sent you. And I definitely have to send myself over there pretty soon. I need to stop by the laboratory very soon. We keep planning on talking about Superman and the Mole Men. It's going to happen. Trust me, soon it is going to happen, so stay tuned. Also, I want to remind you that you can keep up with Comic Book Central and catch each and every episode on my website, comicbookcentral.net. You can get all the episodes that way. I'm also posting some cool stuff over on Facebook and Twitter. I just posted an episode guide for the first 75 episodes of Comic Book Central. You can also click on the About section. Get an updated one with each episode there as well. So be sure to give us a like on Facebook. It's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Don't forget the network. And follow Comic Book Central on Twitter, where you can hashtag share the lair. Thanks so much for everyone doing that. It's at comicbookctrl. And it is that time of year, folks. Summer vacations are coming up. If you're looking for some podcasts to take with, what better way to spend a vacation than by traveling with the likes of Stan Lee, William Shatner, Jamie Alexander, Julie Newmar, the incomparable Julie Newmar, Arrow's David Ramsey, the Hulk, you can hit the beach with the Hulk, Lou Ferrigno, Superman and Supergirl, Dean Cain and Helen Slater, Michael Rosenbaum, you could spend the summer with Summer Glau and her Firefly co-stars. They hung out in the lair. So many others have had some time here to share in the lair with us. They're all out there. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You get all the episodes for your road trips, your beach trips, your flights, everything. If you're looking for podcasts, what other place do you want to be? Hang out in the lair each and every week. Some amazing guests are coming up in the weeks ahead as well. Today is no exception. In fact, this is a special treat today. A very rare interview with the man who brought the Green Hornet to life nearly 50 years ago. Honestly, he doesn't do many interviews these days, folks, but he is with us today. He has given his time for Comic Book Central. So, very special treat today. Check this out, and in just a few minutes, the interview you'll hear only on Comic Book Central, my chat with the great Van Williams. By the time he was cast in 1966 as media mogul Britt Reed, also known as the Green Hornet, Van Williams was already a household name, having appeared in numerous television series including Bourbon Street Beat, Surfside Six, and The Tycoon. When the pop culture TV phenomenon known as Batman biff, pow, and bammed its way into the living rooms, it wasn't long before executive producer William Dozier decided he would take a shot at bringing the emerald-clad vigilante known as the Green Hornet to the small screen. Created by George Trendle and Fran Stryker, the Green Hornet made his debut on a radio program of the same name January 31st, 1936. Accompanied by Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee, the program told the story of Britt Reed, wealthy newspaper publisher by day, masked vigilante by night. Along with his trusty sidekick, Kato, the two hit the streets in Reed's tricked-out car, the Black Beauty, infiltrated gangs by posing as the bad guys, and took down the underworld. Comic books and movie serials followed, and a little over 30 years after making his radio debut, the Hornet was set to invade living rooms across America. Bolstered by the success of the Adam West-Burt Ward Batman TV series, Dozier launched the Green Hornet on September 9th, 1966, complete with a jazzy version of Bumblebee, and, as with Batman, he provided the narration.
Another challenge for the Green Hornet. His aide, Kato, and their rolling arsenal, the Black Beauty. On police records, a wanted criminal, the Green Hornet is really Britt Reed, owner-publisher of the Daily Sentinel. His dual identity known only to his secretary and to the district attorney. And now, to protect the rights and lives of decent citizens, rides the Green Hornet.
Van Williams and martial arts expert Bruce Lee were cast as the Green Hornet and Kato. And all camp elements that defined the Batman TV series were gone from this one. These episodes were dark, gritty, two-fisted, leg-kicking, straight-on crime dramas, and they were incredible. Unfortunately, in 1966, audiences were in the mood for camp from their comic book heroes, and The Green Hornet lasted only one season for 26 episodes. However, in that time, we got two cool crossovers with these four masked marvels. In the Batman Season 2 episode, The Spell of Tut, the Green Hornet and Kato make a surprise cameo as Batman and Robin make their signature climb up a building. And later that same season, we get a two-part classic adventure with the episodes A Piece of the Action and Batman's Satisfaction. In fact, those two episodes are so well remembered, DC Comics recently teamed up with Dynamite Entertainment to produce a 12-part digital, 6-issue sequel called Batman 66 Meets the Green Hornet. Written by director, podcaster, and Batman fanboy Kevin Smith and actor-comedian Ralph Garman. Artwork by Ty Templeton and stunning cover art by Alex Ross. Well, in 1966, my guest today, he ran a newspaper by day as media mogul Britt Reed. By night, he patrolled the mean streets in his tricked-out supercar Black Beauty as the crime fighter, the Green Hornet. He is Van Williams. Van, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you. It's nice to be on.
Nice to have you here. Do I have this right? You either are still or you were a reserve deputy sheriff with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department?
Oh, my God. I'm 80 years old. But, yes, I was a reserve deputy sheriff with L.A. County Sheriff.
You can still enforce some laws.
And ran the whole mountain rescue unit on the western part of L.A. County for 25 years. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Look, I've seen you recently at some comic conventions. I'd still say you can throw down. So I don't know if like you could still make a citizen's arrest or what the deal is. But
anybody can make a citizen's arrest, you know.
But you got the resume to back it up. I thought this was interesting. Lou Ferrigno, he was also sworn in as a deputy sheriff with Los Angeles.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So are you telling me the Green Hornet and the Green Goliath are deputized to fight crime together? This is the greatest team-up ever.
I don't know what you mean by that.
You can go patrol the mean streets with the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yes. That would be great.
Oh, that'd be like the greatest team-up ever. Why the interest in law enforcement? What got you into that?
I can't remember exactly how I stumbled into it. But way back then, it was offered to me to do that. And, they really came to me and said, we need somebody that's kind of a celebrity that we can kind of put forward what we do if you become a reserve deputy and how you do it and how it works for, the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. That's who I was working for. And it was really, it was really a whole new part of my life. I'll tell you what, I got educated so much on that. And I think of all the things that I've done, I think that was probably the most interesting thing I ever did. It really was.
And I've seen like some old interviews with you, like when you were in the middle of all this. And it's like this was more than just a PR stunt. This was, you were armed, you were in the car, you were on patrol. Like what kind of situations did you get yourself into?
I did everything they had to offer, including homicide.
Wow.
I did the beach patrol. I did, working on the beach in shorts and t-shirt and this, that, and the other. Of course, I was armed. And then, you just keep going on and on and on. And then I was in charge of the mountain rescue thing where we used big helicopters and rappelled out of those things down into the canyons and roped these guys up and got them out of there and got a lot of dead bodies out of there, too. Malibu happened to have been one of the major getting rid of bodies areas that there was.
Are you serious? In Malibu?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because once they did that freeway from downtown south Los Angeles all the way out into the valley and then out along all the mountain ridges that overlook Malibu, that was just a great dumping ground. They'd kill them down there and drive all the way out there, dump them in that, and then hope that nobody would ever find them. And they didn't for a long time until we really started working that area, and it was just unbelievable. Of course, L.A. is a big, big, huge city. A lot of crime went on there, a lot of murders, a lot of this, that, and the other, as in a lot of different places. But, I worked it all. I did it all. Worked out of the helicopters and, worked the beach patrol and all of that stuff and enjoyed the heck out of it. That's one of the most important parts of my life.
What was the most dangerous event you found yourself in?
Well, we got involved with chasing a guy that we thought had tried to arm robbery of, to do an armed robbery out there in Malibu. And what he did was he took off into the mountains and he pulled his car over and got out. And if we were coming up, he was shooting at us.
Oh,
well, we got out and shot back at him. So he gets back in his car and he takes off and then we take off and it goes like that. And, that's the way you kind of stumble into things. As a cop or just a normal person, and you get in trouble and you got to shoot your way out. And, I really never fired at anybody trying to kill him except that particular person, but we were so far away that it wouldn't have done much good. At that time it was 38 specials, yeah. Not even 357 Magnums.
Did you make the arrest?
No.
Oh, he got away.
He got away.
Oh, how dare he?
Well, it's just too dadgum many places that you can go out there and disappear. Once you get off the coast highway and there, in all those mountains, there's what, five or six major thoroughfares all the way out to the valley. And you can take any one of those five and go out there, and then you can get off at the top and move all around in there, and then you can just be lost and take we even tried to find people and brought other people in and other stations, their search and rescue teams and everything else, and brought them in there, and if they knew what they were doing, they could hide from us pretty easy.
Oh my goodness. Well, dangerous times. Well, let's talk about something a little bit easier in your career. Let's go back to the beginning a little bit. Some of your early work, you were discovered when you were a diving instructor in Hawaii.
Yeah, I was over there doing work I was doing work for the Navy. I wasn't in the Navy, but I was doing, this back in those days, the scuba, the self-contained underwater breathing apparatus wasn't even invented until the late 40s. And, this was very early on, and we were very, we were trying out new things. We didn't know that much about it because the old hard hat stuff didn't work with scuba. I'm talking about with the big old, lead-footed thing that you wore and it blew up inside and everything else. And that was the way that most diving and diving work was done. But we kind of pushed ahead with scuba and learned to do a lot of things with scuba, which freed you up a heck of a lot more than working with the hard hats.
Yeah, but, I would imagine it's a little bit lighter to get in where you need to be. And this was Liz Taylor's husband discovered you?
Yeah, right. Well, here's what happened. I was over there, and I was working at the Hawaiian Village Hotel. And I was doing, this was kind of in a slow period for the diving I was doing, going all over the South Pacific. And all of a sudden, they come into town. He comes out. They're staying at the hotel, the Hawaiian Village Hotel, where I was working as a part-time underwater diving instructor. you know, and got to know them and this, that, and the other. And he said, you know, if you ever get a chance and you want to do something else besides this, I said, I can't do this diving forever. I've already had the two things of the bends, and that's it. The third one usually starts in with paralysis. So I was at the edge of retiring from that doing that.
You were ready for something different.
Yeah. So anyway, I did. I got up, and I had gotten in touch with him, said I was coming over, and he said, okay, come on over, and we'll get together, and I want to introduce you to some people, this, that, and the other. About 2 weeks after that, I got a telegram that he had been killed in a plane crash.
Yeah, this was Mike Todd.
Mike Todd, yeah. And, you know, he was a hell of a nice guy, really was, and, you know, really was thinking about me doing something else besides what I was doing, because I was losing that career.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just went on from that. But anyway, I did do diving and stayed with that for a while.
Man, was he on the mark, though, because you hit it big. I'm looking at, like, between 1959 and 1965, three big series, Bourbon Street Beat, Surfside
yep.
Six, and The Tycoon.
Yeah,
you had
Tycoon.
You had a lot of series work going on through
there.
Oh,
I did. I did a lot of series. You know, I did... I think the last count was six or seven series. I did a thing called the Red Hand Gang that was a daytime thing. I did another daytime series. I forget what the name of that one was. But, yeah, I did about six or seven series plus all the shows that I did. You know, I worked fairly steadily,
yeah.
Which is something you don't get to do very often in that business. You work hard, you do something, and everybody wants to do it, and then all of a sudden everybody says, oh, he's been shown too much, we can't use him. And, you know, that's why I didn't want to do the Green Hornet. I said, you get established with a thing like that, and everybody says, we can't use him. He was known as the Green Hornet. How are they going to believe another role that he's playing? And that was true.
Yeah.
You know, it worked that way. Adam West worked that way. He's still doing Batman. And, you know, I'm still doing Green Hornet.
Well, for those of us that, you know, remember these things fondly, we appreciate the fact that you ultimately embraced the characters. Did the fact that George Reeves in the Superman TV series, that he was sort of typecast at that point, did that weigh into your mind coming into the project?
Oh, God, yes, because that killed him. That absolutely killed him.
Yeah.
He never worked again, and you know, after he did that Superman thing, and it didn't run very long. And nobody would hire him anymore. He was Superman.
Yeah.
And everybody said, you know, you can't use a guy that's so established as a character and try to get him into something else. Everybody's going to, you know, review the original character that you played, and, you know, that's not going to work. And that's what they did. Almost all of those people that did those identifying roles like that got hurt by that.
Yeah. It was a different time period, too, because now you see people doing comic book movies like crazy, but at the time, it's like, that's who you were.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, what made you change your mind about the Green Hornet? I mean, we're glad you did. We're glad you did, because we got this great season of this series, but what made you change your mind about the Green Hornet?
You mean about doing it?
Yeah, because you were kind of hesitant going in, but you know, I'm looking at some of these scripts and some of these stories. I mean, I'm guessing that you saw some of these scripts and was like, oh, I got to sink my teeth into that.
Yeah, well, it was such a hot item at that time. The agent was saying, you can't just refuse this. What we've got to do is we've got to come up with two or three things that we'll say, okay, he needs a big salary. Well, we were going to ask for $2,000, and I think Adam West was getting $800 a show. And then I forget what the other two things were. But anyway, we asked for this stuff, and you know, slowly but surely, they picked up each one of them.
Wow.
So it got to the point where the big one was, I forget what the biggest one was. But anyway.
Did you have like story input?
One of those
input,
was
or?
Really big and really meant a lot. And we figured, that's the killer. I won't have to do it. Dadgummit, if 2 weeks before they were supposed to start shooting, they didn't have the Green Hornet. And they were still going to do it. And they wanted me to do it.
Oh.
And so I had to sign to do it, and I did it.
They called
your
bluff.
You know, I don't know that I ever... Yeah, it probably hurt me some, but, you know, it's funny because of all the shows that I ever did, I'm always remembered as the Green Hornet.
Yeah.
And it only ran for 26 shows.
Yeah.
You know, of course, it's been played and replayed, and it's still being replayed. And, you know, it was one of those deals where here's a series that should have gone for a long, long time, which I'm glad that it didn't. But anyway, it didn't. It went for 26 shows, and that was the end of it.
Well, I keep remembering Leonard Nimoy's quote, his famous quote. I mean, Jonathan Frakes had mentioned it on the show here. He said, better to be typecast than not cast at all. So, I mean.
Well, that's kind of true. But, you know, at that particular time, I was kind of starting out to be fairly a hot item. You know, I'm not bragging or anything else. I wasn't hot as any of the big ones, you know, that were going on. But anyway, that's kind of the way that it was. And
well, that whole world of Batman was red hot at the time. And I thought it was interesting. Here's a little trivia fact. Most people think your first work on Batman came in season two of the show. We'll talk about those episodes. But you were actually introduced into the world of Batman in the Batman movie that came out in the summer of 66, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Am I correct in saying that you voiced President Lyndon B. Johnson in the Batman movie?
I sure did him in something. Yeah, I think it was a Batman movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted to, you know, they wanted a Texan. And here I was with my good old Texas accent that I'd worked so hard to get rid of, and they wanted me to go do, you know, it was just sound. I wasn't filmed. It was
yeah, it's
just
from
sound.
The back. It's like the chair. It's like we can hear his voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was your first introduction into the world of Batman. Well, hey, you mentioned the Green Hornet. We got to get to this. This is one of my favorite TV shows. September 9th, 1966, we premiered. You mentioned 26 episodes where you appear as Britt Reid, the Green Hornet, owner and publisher of the Daily Sentinel. What did you know about the character going into it, if anything? Had you seen the serials? Had you heard the radio plays, the comics?
The radio. I was a big, big fan of the Green Hornet radio show, you know, that went way back to the 30s, yeah. You know. And I got to watching that when I was, well, I was still working on the ranch in Texas. I had a ranch in Texas, which I've still got, a ranch in Texas. And, you know, I worked there and did that. And I don't know, it's just, I fell into some of the roles I went after, some of the roles I didn't, some of the people wanted me that I didn't want to do, and then some I wanted to do some that they didn't want me to do. So it was a strange business. It really is a strange business. You can be hot and you can work your butt off for a long, long time and everything else, and then all of a sudden they don't want anything to do with you. Nothing. It's happened to too many people.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't care because I wasn't making that. I was already getting out of the business before I died in the business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you were starting to get into some other business ventures and things too.
I got into all sorts of other stuff.
When you were listening to the radio programs, what was it about that character that kind of spoke to you? What interested you in the character of the Green Hornet?
I just liked the way the whole thing was done. That here you take a guy that's an established businessman that's, you know, that's known as a publisher or whatever it was, or the Daily Sentinel, or I don't even remember the name of the...
You got it. That's it.
Yeah. Some of these things are coming back at me.
It's all anyway, there. It's all there in the memory banks.
Yep. But anyway, you know, and all of those things that happened, I keep saying, you know, that show's going to die. I'll never have it to do anything. And here, you know, I've got statues. I've got stuff people send me all the time. I got these, you ask me about these comic books. Have you seen all these comic books they're coming out with now?
I did, yeah. I was going to ask you about those later on, yeah. They're cool. I love them. Well, it's Comic Book Central.
I live
on them.
The artwork on those things is unbelievable.
Oh, it's amazing.
They are really good, well done. I mean, they're not done for, you know, 10-year-old children. They're done for adults.
Right.
And, boy, you can tell that a lot of work went into that. The artists and stuff that are on there are just unbelievable to me.
All of us kids at heart. What I found interesting about the character, too, was it kind of reminds me of, like, these old crime dramas from the 40s and these sort of noir seedy underworld kind of thing. I mean, even the character Green Hornet, he presents himself as a criminal so that he can infiltrate these things. Now, here's what I'm interested in about, because this came about because of the success of the Batman TV show. The Batman TV show, complete camp, complete off the wall, colors, vibrant colors, pop culture, everything. When you sort of came into this, was that your thinking? Was like, oh, wait a minute, are we doing a crazy version of Green Hornet? Or what was it? What were those conversations like when you first?
Well, yeah, they you know, I wasn't even thinking about that. But I said to myself, if I get tied up doing this thing, I'm not going to do a wham bam thank you ma'am like Batman. I'm going to play it straight, and if they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. Yeah. So I won't be around very long. If they want the, what did they call Batman? Yeah, the camp.
Yeah.
You know, I said, I'm not going to do camp.
Yeah.
No way. So that was kind of a tossing thing because they were thinking about doing it that way. And I said, you want me? You're not going to get me to do camp. I'm going to do it straight because I want to do it just like the old radio show was done. And that's what turned me on to the Green Hornet, you know, for years and years back.
Yeah.
And I did. I only did 26 shows, probably because I did play it straight. But anyway, that's the one everybody remembers me from.
Well, and I think it was so far ahead of its time because it's interesting now because all the superheroes are dark and they're grim and they're gritty and they're, you know, and it's like the Green Hornet, that's what the Green Hornet was. I think it just hit at a time when everybody was thinking comic books, pow, bam, zam. It was so far ahead of its time, and good for you for sticking to your guns to do that. We talked about William Dozier, who was the producer. He was the producer of both shows, and he actually did the narration of the Green Hornet, too. So I think there was that element of tying the shows together. But you played it straight as an arrow. We got to talk about Bruce Lee, your co-star in this. The two of you met for the first time at, like, the press conference introducing you?
Yeah, back in New York, they flew us back there and were introducing that, and I got to meet Bruce, and, you know, he became a really good friend of mine, and we did that show together and enjoyed working with each other, and I admired him for what he did, and, you know, he didn't become very big until about 3 years after the show died because he ended up having to go back to Hong Kong to go to work. He couldn't get work in L.A., okay. Even after the Green Hornet. You know, it didn't do him a whole lot of good. Then he did that show, and it came on, and he did another show, and then he died. But then he got so big from those shows that he did back there.
Yeah.
And they were good, because I saw two or three of the first ones that he did when he went back over to Hong Kong because he couldn't get a job in L.A. anymore. And he went back over there, and he did some of these things, and let me tell you, they were awful. He said they were awful. He said, don't get after me about how I acted in this thing. I hated it. But anyway, he changed that because he started getting big from the movie, and they made two movies, and then he died. He died.
Yeah,
that was a horror story, you know, what happened to him there.
Yeah.
The
short amount of time that he was acting in Hollywood, it just amazes me what he was able to do. And just with you being so close to him on the set, give the rest of us perspective of that, because he's so fast. How do you shoot that on such a small? I mean, you know, in such a small
area.
You
don't. You have to slow him down.
Wow.
Because he loved to do all the speed stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And as we went down, you know, did some shows, and the more we did the shows, the faster he got. And we finally had to get him, and I said, Bruce, we're going to go, and we're going to watch dailies, which is usually a no-no, where the star of the show does not get to watch dailies, because you change something, and then it screws everything all up, you know. But we took him in there. We set him down. Nobody knew he was there except me and the guy that was my stuntman. And we sat there, and they started running these things. And all of a sudden, everybody started laughing. And I'm saying, what the heck? And they were laughing at him because, you know, he would come into a room dressed all in black as he was, you know. And he would get in, and all you would hear is, wah, 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 you know, and you couldn't see a thing that was going on. And people flipping around, and he was flipping around everything, and it was comical. So we had to slow him down.
Wow.
And we slowed him down, and then you could see what he was doing. And then they lit it differently because, you know, that was, I forget what they called it, but it was low key black backgrounds and all of that stuff. And, of course, he was in solid black.
Yep.
So you hardly ever saw him. So we slowed it down. He did it, and it started to get very, very popular. If he had kept on and done that stuff, he would have been probably one of the biggest movie stars that ever was because he had a huge following. And it's just a pity that that happened to him.
Yeah.
Because this is what he wanted. He wanted to show off his you know, work with what he called, he named this stuff that he was doing, Jeet Kune Do. And that was a thing that he had combined a bunch of the different martial arts to this thing that he called Jeet Kune Do. And what it meant was the way of the fist. He was doing a lot more with the fist than he was with the feet.
What was it about Bruce Lee that impressed you the most?
You know, he was an honest kid that was very, very enthused about what he could do with his feet and his hands and everything else. He was absolutely in love with martial arts. And that's what he wanted to be a star of, is martial arts. He didn't care anything about being a star actor or anything else. He used to go, you know, y'all stand around with your arms crossed, watching the film and going on and everything else, and everybody's doing their thing and whatever. And he would get behind everybody. He would jump up in the air, kick out, and with the toe of his shoe, hit your earlobe. And he did it every time. Every time, just perfect. Then one time, my stuntman was talking to a guy, and he turned his head just as Bruce kicked out, and he kicked him in the jaw and dislocated his jaw. So that was the end of the romping stuff that he did on the set. That was ruled out. No more.
Man, but, you got to keep him in check. You got to keep Bruce Lee in check, man. That is...
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like I said, the look of the show was great. You talk about Black Beauty. Did you get to drive the car specific, or was that all stuntmen? And I mean, did you actually get to get behind the wheel and tear off in this thing?
Well, one of the bad problems with it was, you know, they had that dadgum thing that folded down into the back that I ran all the stuff, you know, the whatever we had on that car.
Yeah, it was all tricked out.
Yeah, it's all tricked out, and it's because we had a folded-down thing. Well, to do it, and do it practical, where it did work, all that stuff, they had to move the seat all the way forward. Now, Bruce Lee was a lot smaller than I was, you know, and he was jammed up against the thing, and he was a terrible driver, a terrible driver. He just, I don't know, he couldn't see or he couldn't do anything, and everybody was scared to death to have him get in that car and start driving it because he was going to hit lights, which he did. He hit a lot of stuff, you know. But anyway,
He crashed Black Beauty?
Oh, yeah. Well, he didn't, no big crash. He just ran into some lamps.
He would bump into some things on the lot.
Yeah, some of those gimbals, you know, they had sticking around. It was
so he's kicking guys in the ear. He's wrecking the car.
Yeah, but then it was a lot of stuff that just made you break out laughing, you know, and it was funny. I enjoyed working with him. He was a good kid, and I really enjoyed it. We became really good friends, you know, and it's terrible because he was really getting to be popular.
Well, what an impression he made just in the short time he was here.
Oh, yeah.
And then, okay, so we're one season of Green Hornet, and then there's this crossover episode with Batman. And we talked about it, which coincidentally was just on this morning. I had a chance to watch. It was on IFC. The DVDs are out. We get to watch these things. But there was a cameo. You popped your head out of the window and the spell of Tut. But then we've got a piece of the action, March 1967, and Batman's Satisfaction. Now, as is often the case when superheroes meet, before they team up, they got to throw down. You go toe-to-toe with Batman. Bruce Lee goes toe-to-toe with Burt Ward's Robin. Tell us a little bit about filming those fight scenes, and Bruce got a little crazy on one of them, didn't he?
He absolutely scared Burt Ward. He absolutely scared him to death. And because he kept bragging, Burt Ward kept bragging, oh, yeah, if I have to get in there and fight him, I know how to beat that guy. You know, I'm a better, you know. He didn't know crap about martial arts at all, none. You know, and he gets in there, and I'll swear to God, he was shaking in his clothes and everything else when they went in to do their fight scene.
Because the original script, Robin beats Kato in the original script.
Yeah.
And Bruce wasn't too happy about that, right?
Bruce said, if that's what you want, get somebody else. I'm not going to lose to that idiot. And that's what happened.
And full disclosure, they were friends off camera, though, right? I mean, they knew each other off camera.
You talking about Burt Ward and...
And Bruce Lee.
No.
Oh, they didn't?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Nah, they weren't friends at all.
Okay.
No, it was a lot of competition. You know, I think what happened was, you know, Bruce Lee did his thing, and all of a sudden he was much more popular than Burt Ward was.
Yeah.
So he got all ticked off about it and you know, didn't want to keep going with it and everything else. And, you know, if we had gone another 2 or 3 years with him playing the thing straight like he did, you know, and he would have been one of the biggest movie stars ever, I think.
Now, talk about the fight scene itself. So take us in the fight scene. They're going square off, and Bruce, he has a little bit of trickster in him, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He can sneak around and do all sorts of things, you know. It was
okay.
It was absolutely unbelievable what he would do on the set.
But he kind of teased Burt Ward a little bit before you started filming.
Oh, God, yes. He said, you know, I'm going to kill that son of a bitch. I'm going to let it be known that I'm going to do this show, and I'm going to kill him. And actually, Burt Ward believed every bit of it. He was absolutely scared to death to do this scenes with Bruce Lee because he knew he wasn't going to have a chance doing anything, you know. So they finally did it, and they really calmed it down because, you know, Bruce Lee wanted to beat him so bad and everything else, he would have let, if you'd have turned him loose, we would have had blood all over everything.
But he was kidding Burt Ward a little bit, though, wasn't he? He was tweaking him a little bit before the shoot.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He let him off the hook, yeah.
Because, you know, he said, I don't understand how they're going to believe this, just like I don't understand how you're going to fit in to do the things that Batman does. You know, they played at camp, we played it straight. It didn't work out as far as we were concerned, but we did it anyway, and it sort of worked out, I guess. I don't know.
I think it works perfectly because you look at it, and like I said, they keep the camp on the Batman side. You guys play it straight, and they give you an out. Like, the cops come in and break up the fight before you guys get to completely throw down, so it's like nobody wins.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
They
knew that was going to happen, so they kind of prepared everybody to be, you know, because if we let us go and let them go, we would have torn up the scenery really bad.
I would have liked to see the outtakes on that one. That would have been cool. I know you're only on the show for a season, but favorite moments, favorite episodes, playing the Green Hornet. What were some of your favorite parts?
I enjoyed doing the show. I enjoyed doing some of the stunts. I got to do a lot of the stunts, you know, and I enjoyed doing them. And I enjoyed what they were trying to do with that show. And I did everything I could to make it work. And I think I did make it work. The problem was, I guess the producers or somebody didn't think it worked that well, so they only ran it through the 1 year. And, you know, that's the way it goes in that business. Either it's going, it's working, but they cut it off way too short. Like I said, Bruce was building up and he was going to be a big, big star from that, what he was doing. And I was doing all right with it and everything else. And I think people did enjoy the role that I played, playing it straight instead of camp. It just was not a thing for me to do camp with that character. I don't think I would have ever done camp at all. I didn't like it, you know.
Well, I think it probably would have helped to have a love interest, too, because you had, you know, the lovely Wendy Wagner, you know, as your secretary.
Yeah, they made a big mistake of making that a half-hour show. It should have been, I told them when I went in to see it, I said, when I went in to talk to them about it, and Dozier and all of them, I said, you're going to make a big mistake if you run this as a half-hour show. I said, it's not going to work. You've got too many angles, too many things to establish, and you're going to go, give each one of them 5 or 10 minutes, and that's not going to work. You got to give this show an hour. Well, they thought about it, and they did this, that, and the other, and they thought, well, hell, we'll put it in there. And then they were thinking about maybe putting it on a Saturday afternoon as an hour, but they didn't have a place for it as an hour. So it went on as a half hour, and it didn't work.
Yeah, and like you said, there's so much depth there, and it really reminds me of those, like, crime dramas that do take place over an hour because you have to solve a crime as it's going through. So, yeah, I got to agree with that. I think that would have been amazing too. But
you had to get the lead that I played in plain clothes. You got him involved in the crime. Then you had to get Bruce Lee involved in the crime. And then you had to get them both involved. And then by the time you did it all, you didn't, and there was no room for romance. I was supposed to have a kind of a hidden affair going with Wendy Wagner. Well, we never got to do that. And I think it was a big mistake in that show not to have, not to have the room to do it. And because, she was a good looking girl. She was a good actress. She was a sweetheart to work with and everything else. She would have been, and she wasn't real happy with the role she was getting because she didn't get that much to do.
Yeah, I think that would have been amazing to have a relationship kind of building with them over the years. But it wasn't to be, but we've got 26 great episodes. We've got a couple of episodes of Batman that are really kind of cool. Did you keep any of the costume? Anything around
no,
for the set?
No.
Nothing?
Oh. No. I didn't know it, but they had already been working towards, are we going to play it yet next year or not? And as soon as the word got out, and I was not working at that time doing the show, as soon as the word got out, within a day, every bit of the same that I wore, including my shoes and the overcoat, the hat, disappeared.
Oh. Have you ever seen it turn up anywhere? Like, is it getting up in a museum?
No,
or like somebody
never did.
You?
Oh. Never did.
That would have been a cool costume to have, but
because that was a beautiful coat, that overcoat. It was all Carroll and Company. I think was the outfit that made it. In it was a big company, clothing line in Beverly Hills, and they did all of that, and they did a heck of a job. It was a beautiful coat. I would have loved to have had that overcoat, and it was gone.
Not easy to fight in, though, right?
No, it wasn't easy to fight it, but it was okay, I didn't have to do all the stuff because if you'll remember, I didn't do kung fu or jeet kune do. I did the old fist, the old way of doing it that they always did.
And you had the hornet stinger.
Yeah, I had the hornet stinger, but I never did the jumping around, kicking, and all of that stuff, like Bruce did.
Let Bruce Lee handle all the heavy work. Oh, he did all the heavy lifting. You played it smart.
Yeah,
Well, even though that was it, that wasn't your only time in the world of the Green Hornet. You actually wrote, or at least plotted out, a 1990 comic, Tales of the Green Hornet, The Burma Horse.
Yeah.
So we get that.
Yeah, they wanted me. That was on the comic book you're talking about.
Yeah, you actually did a plot for, and they turned it into two issues.
Yeah, they wanted me to, because of what I'd done, it was my background and, working over in Asia and all that area that I was doing all that secret stuff. They wanted me to take one and make it a part of the show, or part of the book.
Yeah.
So I did it, and it was very popular, and they were going to do some more, and they canceled the show.
Now, will you so you mentioned, because this all takes place, like Cato goes over and starts making a movie, and it's about drug running during, they're shooting a movie over in China, and there's some drug running. So, what were you in? You mentioned you were involved in something that they wanted your background in. What was that?
Can't really talk about that.
Okay. So, okay.
It's kind of a hush-hush thing that I did.
You got a secret Green Hornet life going on?
It wasn't a Green Hornet life. Believe me.
Interestingly enough, we can see a glimpse of this in Tales of the Green Hornet, The Burma Horse, 1990 Now Comics. Go find it. It's on. I found mine online. I picked mine up. And we mentioned the latest. So you actually read Batman 66 meets the Green Hornet? Somebody sent that to you?
Oh, God, I've got a stack of them here. You know how many of those they've made?
A lot.
I think they're up to 12 or something like that. And I'm looking at, because we got two homes, one in Idaho and one down here. I'm at the home in Arizona. And I've got a stack of them here and a stack of them up in Idaho.
Wow.
And I keep getting these things, and they say, you know, look at these and give us your opinion of it and everything else. Well, they're all kind of similar, but they're really, have you seen them?
I have them. They're right in front of me. I love them. They're written by the great director, Kevin Smith, who's a huge comic book fan. He wrote it along with Ralph Garman, who's a huge Batman fan. This is actually a comic book sequel to your Batman episodes.
Yeah.
Roger C. Carmel played it was Colonel Gum. Now he's General Gum in the book. And Cesar Romero's Joker. What'd you think of the books?
Yeah. Well, I really liked them, and I thought that it was a very professional job and everything else. The only thing that kind of upset me is they never asked me if I wanted to do them.
I was wondering about that, because there's all these likeness rights and things. I know with Roger C. Carmel, the late Roger C. Carmel, they didn't get his likeness rights from his estate, so they put like a big mask on him.
Is that right?
In the comic,
I didn't know that.
In the comic, they couldn't get that. And I was wondering, they didn't get your likeness rights in it. So they kind of, it doesn't look really like you, but it's you, but it's kind of not.
Well, it's pretty dang close. In fact, some of them are dead on. They really are.
Okay.
But, you know, I wasn't in it all that much. But I think they did a heck of a job. And a lot of those looked awful like Adam West.
They got his likeness rights, because it's huge now. They've settled all the legal wranglings, and now we've got all this Adam West, Burt Ward, Batman stuff out. Batman's released on DVD and Blu-ray. The series is out. What about the Green Hornet? What's going on here? Has anybody talked to you about this?
Yeah, they've talked to me about it. They don't have enough shows to do it, to run it. They've thought about doing it, thought about going back in production, and then, Jesus, how could you do that? In 1966 to what, 2006, that's a lot of space in there.
Firefly only has 14 episodes, and that was released on DVD, so we've got to get the Green Hornet here. And anything Britt Reed can do here to move this along, what needs to happen?
I think it's way past doing it. It's kind of surprising, because every now and then it raises its ugly head that I hear it's going to be brought back, and then nobody does anything.
Yeah.
And then, I didn't hear anything about any comic books or anything else, except I get a pile of, I think there were six of them, six comic books.
Yep.
And I said, what the hell is this? Nobody talked to me about this. And I open it up, and I'm saying, Jesus, this is really professional. It's really good artwork and good stories. Nobody ever asked me a thing.
It's a great story
to this day.
I would love to see that as a sequel episode to it. I think even Kevin Smith, who was one of the writers on it, who's the director, they did an animated version of it online, and they did
Really?
Of the voices. Yeah, it's kind of cute. It's kind of cute to watch it. It was just the first issue, so hopefully they'll do the other five. But I know it took almost 50 years for Batman to come out on DVD, because once all the legal things. So have they mentioned anything at all about the possibility of Green Hornet coming out now that Batman is out? Because Batman
They've
just came out.
They've talked about it, but they always come up with the same excuse.
Okay.
We don't have enough of them.
Okay.
We only did 26, and they figured, to have it run right, they should do 3 years of it. 3 times 26. Actually, it should have been more than that, because when we were starting to do this, like the old series that I did, they did 39 of those a year, not 26.
Yeah, you guys are cranking them out.
Oh yeah, I mean, that was hard work. We were doing those damn things and running from stage to stage, because they were having 3 and 4 shows being shot at the same time in Warner Brothers, next door to each other. I'd run over there and change clothes and do that shot, and run back and do the other one. you know, it was running, everybody was running crazy on it, and they said, oh, we can't do it this way anymore. We got to do it, you know, where we just play, you know, the show is on, it's, you know, it's got its own spot, it's going to stay there, and we're going to run it that way, and they didn't do it that way, and I think that's one of the main reasons why it failed.
Well, hopefully the powers that be will see the success that Batman had on DVD and will release the Green Hornet on DVD and Blu-ray as well. So, and if you hear anything, be sure to let us know. We'll get that out. You're still ranching? You mentioned Hawaii and Texas.
I've got a ranch in Texas that you know, I've got tired of raising cattle, and the only people that made any money on that was the foreman of the ranch. So I got tired of doing that, so I just leased out a grass lease on the ranch, and it's, you know, people've got beef cattle running on it and grazing on it. Yeah, I've still got about, I don't know, I was 2,000-3,000 acres, and now it's whittled down to about 300 acres or something like that. Oh, I don't even know. Don't have, but it's there.
I'm sure it's
and boy, I'll tell you what, that has taken off like crazy because it's North Fort Worth, which didn't have a big spurt for a while, and then all of a sudden it took off, and I've been getting calls down there lately that they want to do it and they want to lease it or buy it or whatever. If they buy it, they'll pay $20,000 an acre for it.
Wow.
It just goes up from there. It's just amazing what's... Yeah, and all of the... Where I had the ranch house and this, that, and the other, there's a college there. There's also a high school there now. I mean, it's just grown up so much. You know, Dallas-Fort Worth is just blown up. It's just gone crazy.
My goodness. Well, I guess your property would put Bruce Wayne's property to shame, so... Hey, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. Did you see the latest Green Hornet film, the one that came out in 2011?
Oh God, I saw 15 minutes of it. I was flying somewhere, and I turned it off, and I've never watched it since. And everybody said it was just awful.
Okay, so, I had to ask. I had to ask because I know they offered you a cameo. I think you wisely said no.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Not that I did. You know, the main reason I did it was because, you know, you're going to hire this guy to do it, so you're going to make a comedy out of it. I have no interest in making a comedy out of the Green Hornet. I didn't look at it that way, so they forgot me.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think you hit the nail on the head. You don't do it camp back in the day. You don't do a full blown comedy now. I think you hit the nail on the head, and I think you've got a total sense of the character. Who would you pick? Is there an actor out now that you would say that's the Green Hornet?
You know what? I never really even put that to mind and thought about it. People did ask me, you know, if you didn't do it, who would you get to do it? And let's see who. Oh, I'll tell you who it was. George Clooney was offered that. And they said, if you do that, who would you want to play your part? And he said, Van Williams. And I said, I didn't even know he knew who the hell I was. You know? But anyway, I thought that was a nice compliment.
Yeah, well, I think Clooney's probably done with superheroes after Batman. I think he got raked over the coals for that one. Hey, you mentioned a couple convention appearances. Do you have anything coming up, or how can fans find out more about you?
No.
Okay.
I've lost interest in that whole end of my, you know, deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did it. I enjoyed it. I liked what I did. I was very proud of what I did with it, and cut print. We're all done with that part of my life.
So. Well, you know what? There's a lot to be proud of. We enjoy watching all these things. And I tell you what, Van, The Green Hornet is a classic series. It is long, long overdue on home video. I hope it's released soon so that even another generation can thrill to the adventures of Green Hornet and Kato. Thank you so much for these terrific performances. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on the show.
Them.
Oh, no problem. I watched them this morning. So, and hey, thank
good
you.
For you.
Thank you for joining me on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. I enjoyed the talk with you.
I have to say, I haven't read Burt Ward's book, but from what I've seen online in doing some research for this episode, it might be a different tale told about the Robin Kato fight scene. I'm just saying. So, who knows? Bert, if you're listening, would love to have you on the show as a guest. Come into the lair, talk about it. Invitations out there. Who knows? Maybe this is one of those stories that might be lost to time. Who knows? Of course, the classic team-up is on the Batman Blu-ray and DVD sets that were recently released. And the superhero standoff can be seen on YouTube. It's pretty cool. Good stuff. These guys are all tremendous as our favorite heroes. And I truly, truly appreciate Van spending some time with me today. As I mentioned earlier, his interviews and appearances are rare. He mentioned himself that he's 80. So for him to take the time to speak with me, I have to say that meant a lot. It is truly special and a special treat for you listeners out there as well. I hope you enjoyed it. You're only going to hear that on Comic Book Central, folks. So be sure to tell your family, tell your friends, share the lair, let them know about this rare event that you just heard with the great Van Williams. And my goodness, they need to get this show on DVD and Blu-ray soon. I'm sure it'll happen. And hey, look, don't forget, you can catch each and every episode of Comic Book Central at our website, comicbookcentral.net. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Please leave a review if you're there. Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. And as I said, hashtag share the lair on Twitter at comicbookctrl. Hitting the mailbox this week. This week I heard from friend of the show, Chris Franklin. He's from the Supermates and Power Records podcast. Ah, love me some Power Records. Love those. Chris wrote in regarding my Legends of the Superheroes interviews. He says, great interview with Brad Sanders. And for you listeners out there, if you haven't heard the episode yet, Brad played Ghetto Man on Legends of the Superheroes. So, very cool character. Chris goes on to write, he says, that was surprisingly insightful and thought-provoking. I never would have thought that going in, given the subject matter. I think Mr. Sanders may have been thinking of the Blackhawks when he talked about the Nazi-looking superheroes. Blackhawk had an international team of aviators who all wore caps and big black boots, and one was a Germanic old man with a big mustache named Hendrickson. Oh, and your interview with Legends Flash actor Rod Haas reminded me of how much I loved Hero at Large as a kid. I hadn't seen it in decades, and when I mentioned that to my wife Cindy, she went right to Amazon and ordered me a copy. My 13-year-old son and I watched it, and we both really enjoyed it. Can't wait to hear from Van Williams. Well, Chris, your wait is over. I hope you enjoyed the Van Williams interview today. And I'm glad you enjoyed my wrap-up with Legends of the Superheroes. Wrap that up with Brad Sanders. Yeah, that was a fun one. And also glad I reminded you of Hero at Large. One of my favorites. Glad to hear that it was one of your favorites as well. And thank you for sending along the information on Blackhawk. I have to be honest, that's a series that I wasn't as familiar with. And when you sent that picture in, I took a look at it, and it's like, yeah, that's more than likely what he was talking about. It's exactly what they look like. So thanks for sending that in. Be sure to check out Chris's podcast, the Supermates podcast, and the Power Records podcast. Just like Chris, drop me a line. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what you think of the Van Williams interview. Send some information along as well. I love learning new things about old comics. That's the fun part about doing this. If you send it to the lair, I'm going to read it on the air. The email address is joe@comicbookcentral.net, or go to the website comicbookcentral.net and click the Signal Me tab right there on the website. All right, folks, that wraps up another episode of Comic Book Central. Big thanks to Van Williams for those amazing Green Hornet adventures all those years ago and for taking some time to speak to all of us here today on Comic Book Central. What an honor that was. At this point now, I think I'm done. I'm going to take Black Beauty out for a ride. I'm going to blast through the front door of the lair here. But it's only going to be a short ride. I shall return because next week on Comic Book Central, from Hell's Kitchen and the law office of Nelson and Murdoch, I'm sitting down with a man who brings Franklin Foggy Nelson to life on the smash hit Netflix series Marvel's Daredevil. That's right. Actor Eldon Henson will join me next week. Hey, kids, he's in The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Parts 1 and 2. We're going to talk about those films. We're going to talk about the Marvel Universe. And we're also going to talk about which Marvel movie that Eldon would like to appear in as Foggy. We're going to talk about that as well. That's going to be an interesting answer. That's coming up next week. Until then, keep being super, keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Gee whiz, Batman. Dropping in on a drugstore might have been easier.
Exercise never hurt anyone, Robin. We must always keep the element of surprise on our side.
What are you doing here?
I might ask you the same question.
Pursuing the enemies of law and order wherever they happen to be.
Aren't you in the wrong city?
On special assignment for the Daily Sentinel. You know my aide, Cato?
Robin, the boy wonder.
Well, I don't want to hold you up from your crime fighting.
Thank you, and good luck to you, Mr. Hornet.
Nice to have met you.
Gosh, Batman, what are they dressed like that for?